Seattle.com for option details.
Let's go!
This is Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
KIRO AM Seattle. KIRO FM HD2 Tacoma. Home of the Seahawks, Mariners, and everything Seattle sports. Seattle Sports Snapshot.
The Mariners are back after an off day. They'll open their series against the Houston Astros tonight at T-Mobile. Chris Flexen gets the start against Justin Verlander. First pitch is at 6:40 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. Meanwhile, Seattle selected lefty reliever Roenis Elias from AAA Tacoma earlier today. He'll replace Drew Steckenrider, who was sent down earlier this week. Finally, it's Avalanche Blues today in the NHL playoffs. That one beginning at 5 p.m. Colorado leads the series.
Snapshot, brought to you by Coors Light, keeping Washington chill.
This hour is brought to you by Mazda of Everett.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It is Friday. Thankfully, we're all very excited for a long weekend. But I wanted to look back at what I thought was a really fun week of interviews. It wasn't a great week for the Mariners, but it was a great week for Mariners analysis. We talked to some local folks, to some national writers. We talked plenty of Seahawks talk, even though their offseason continues because they began OTAs earlier in the week. So we had a lot of conversations. Let's talk about what's sticking with you from the week. This hour brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Jake, I'll start. What's sticking with me from the week is our interview with Bob Nightingale of USA Today. First, he talked about his theory about what he thinks the Mariners are lacking. I don't fully agree with him, but I do want you guys to hear that. So here's what he said.
Well, I think they're really missing the veteran leadership in that clubhouse. You know, there's not that veteran there that guys lean on. And I think when guys struggle, it's like, okay, let me get some advice or, you know, consolation from guys who have been there and done that. You know, Seager was one of those guys for sure in that clubhouse. I just think they missed that leadership. And, you know, they don't have it. There's so many young players in that team. And I think we're going for the way free fall like they are now. It just gets worse. It's just sometimes I think they wonder where to turn.
So he says one problem is that they got rid of, or rather let walk, some important veterans. Kyle Seager being one of those guys, and that relationship was done and moving on. But reliever Joe Smith being one of those guys. You could argue Tyler Anderson maybe being one of those guys, but certainly some of the older guys being important there and no longer with the team. They still have some veteran leadership, so I don't know that I fully agree with Bob as far as that being the big issue there, but what is really sticking with me is what he had to say about Trevor Story. I've heard multiple reasons why Trevor Story didn't ultimately sign with the Mariners. I have heard, things like, well, he wanted to be able to ultimately go from second back to short, and there was a path where that was possible with Boston, whereas it was not possible with Seattle, who recently committed long-term to J.P. Crawford. You hear, well, ultimately Boston just, you know, offered more. You hear that the Mariners offered more, but he didn't want to go to Seattle and be stuck with what he felt was a losing team, and he wanted to be with a team that he felt was a winner. Like, you've heard all kinds of mixed things. Mm-hmm. Bob Nightingale was asked why he thinks Trevor Story chose the Red Sox over the Mariners and Rangers.
I think he just wanted more money. I think he thought, he saw what Corey Seager got, you know, $325 million. Marcus Semien got $175 million from Texas, you know, a place where he wanted to go. So I think he thought, let me get as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. And really it was kind of holding out hope for Texas. And then, of course, the lockout came. And then it became a situation where I think Seattle's interest had dropped off. And then he said, okay, who's left? Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, Boston giving up pretty much the same amount of money. I think Seattle was at one point. And there was a time, too, he didn't want to switch positions. Of course, he did with Boston. So I think it's more of a timing thing than anything else, choosing Boston over Seattle.
So, yes, a timing thing more than anything else. But number one, why did Seattle lose interest after the lockout? And number two, if it was mostly about money to begin with, why was Seattle not offering him as much as they possibly could and more than these other teams? If it was ultimately about money, and not about Trevor Story wanting to play at shortstop in the near future or be in Boston over other places. If Seattle could have offered him a number that was enough, why did they not?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I have no idea.
Curtis?
I have no idea.
We're even on the series.
And you know what? That's fine because it is. It genuinely is the question that I would love to have answered because the Mariners are never going to get the deal that is 100% favorable to them. The Robbie Ray situation, I believe that they were the ones that had to pay a little bit more to be able to get Robbie Ray to the Mariners. And it worked within the parameters that they were willing to go. Right, because it was a fair or at least a good deal that no one around Major League Baseball looked at the deal that Robbie Ray got and said, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. They way overpaid for Robbie Ray, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's nobody said that about that. If you pay Trevor Story, Marcus Semien money, I do believe that there are probably going to be people that say, well, I don't know.
They're going to say, how is he out of course?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of question marks about that. But when you're the Mariners and you don't have the franchise history and recent success that a lot of these other franchises have that, oh, by the way, are going to continue to keep trying to improve their teams, and they're not just going to let you go and, you know, the Mariners want to be good. Okay, well, we'll just, you know, back off from free agency this year and not really compete in the market. No, they're going to compete. And they offered, you know, according to Bob Nightingale, that they offered a contract that was right in the range, very similar to what the Mariners offered. And whether the Mariners offer just a little bit more or not is irrelevant. They are going to have to order, or they're going to have to offer more, like significantly more, a premium more to be able to land some of these bigger names. I mean, you look at next year. Okay, let's talk about next year. Trey Turner's going to be available, correct?
Yeah, Xander Bogaerts.
You think Xander Bogaerts or Trey Turner are going to come to Seattle on a similar deal that the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Yankees or any of these other teams are willing to offer them? Heck no. Absolutely not. Like, that's just the truth. That's the reality. And so to live in a world where this front office would be operating under the premise that they're not going to bring in a premier star unless it's under their parameters, that you'll never get anybody. You'll never land anybody.
Yeah, but what if that's just how people continue to operate?
Well, then they're going to continue to be a middling team, and they won't make the playoffs. That's just the way it's going to go.
How are you
unless
feel about
Julio
that?
Rodriguez is a superstar, Jared Kelnick's a superstar, George Kirby, every single one of their prospects hits, which we know just doesn't happen in baseball. Look at Evan White. Look at Kyle Lewis. Look at Jared Kelnick at the current moment. That just doesn't work out like that in baseball. And if you're banking on that, then that's a mistake. That's a mistake. And I have been 100% on board with everything that this organization has done since they've said we are tearing this thing down and we are rebuilding. I have genuinely liked everything that they have done for the most part, outside of Omar Narváez. I still can't believe they traded him. I don't understand that. However, now you're getting to the point where it's time to transition, and it's time to, you know, you made that very clear to everyone that the expectations are now to get to the playoffs, and we want to win games, and we want to compete at the highest level, and we're making this turn now from rebuilding to competing. And, you know, if you're going to take that approach in the offseason every single year, you're never going to actually get over the hump. You're never going to do it, ever. Sorry.
I think that's what I worry about, though. Like, the whole idea of Seattle losing interest after the lockout ended, I don't get why. I don't get why that happened. Is that because they were sold on the idea of bringing in Winker and figured we'll focus on that and just have Frazier at second? Is it because they no longer wanted to spend that money? Is it because there were more playoff spots and they thought maybe we don't need to go all in this year and we can squeeze into a playoff spot? I mean, what might have changed after the lockout?
No clue. No clue. I mean, it could have been. It could have been that, hey, we don't need to spend that kind of money, that Jerry DePoto's working on trades and phone calls, and there's an opportunity to get Jesse Winker, someone that we as an organization really, really like and value, and we think he's one of the best hitters in baseball, even more so than Trevor Story. We believe that Jesse Winker is more of a sure thing than Trevor Story because we don't know how his power is going to translate from Coors Field to, you know, a different ballpark or a different venue. Like, I could see that, and we could get Suarez, and okay, we could get two bats, and we don't even have to pay big money. that we can get this in payroll-wise, we can be cost-effective? Like, yeah, I could easily see how they would walk themselves into that line of thinking. But my thought process is, why not both? Nothing stopping you from getting both. Nothing
Can
stopping
I just say
you.
That's what bothers me about a lot of feedback about it is the idea that, like, well, why would you want a point two random shortstop, Correa, whatever it is, when you have JP? And it's like, it's not about exchanging out one of your best players and inserting a different good player. It's about having JP and Trevor Story and Mitch Haniger instead of having someone who's a utility guy in there far more often than he should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's ultimately what it's about. And I think that people, I don't know if it's conditioning themselves to think this way. I don't know if it's feeling like the team truly has less money to work with than it actually does. But I think people look at this roster and they almost like limit themselves in thinking what's possible with it. Like, there is a middle ground. There is a big middle ground between where the Mariners are right now and the Dodgers. Like, oh, it is not 0-60. The idea that if you say, oh, well, add one more big name free agent, it's like, what is this? What is this, L.A.? Like, there are millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in between there where you can be a good team. You can make yourself a good team mm-hmm. without completely breaking the bank. And I think that some fans, and if you're not one of these people that I'm not talking to you, I think that some fans have conditioned themselves to think that, like, there's only a limited amount of talent that the Mariners can have at one time, and actually they can have quite a bit more than they have right now.
Yeah, 100%.
And for one reason or another chose not to. Was some of it out of their control? Yes, but some of it was a choice. Why? That's my question.
Correct. And also over-relying on younger players is not the key to success. The key to success is to have a soft landing spot for a lot of these young players to come up to where they can learn, they can grow, and they're not going to be a detriment to whether you win or lose, right? And if they're good enough, if they're great, like Jared Kelnick, he's great. It doesn't matter who is in front of him. It doesn't matter what veteran you bring in. He is going to be a guy that earns himself a starting spot in the rotation. Or you have a situation where one of those guys moves on and you have them waiting in the wings. Look at the Houston Astros and Jeremy Peña.
Yeah, he's the best shortstop maybe in the American League, and he was behind Carlos Correa up until this season. And Correa moves on to Minnesota, and the Astros don't skip a beat. They're still probably going to be among the best teams in the American League. Maybe
the best
even
in the AL West right now.
Oh, yeah, and I think the only team that you could easily say is better than them is the Yankees in the American League.
Right.
And, like, we all have been here on these airwaves, and Mariners fans have been sitting at home for years and years and years saying, oh, well, the Astros are going to drop off eventually.
Nope.
Sorry.
Says who?
Yeah. Sorry.
There's no guarantee that they're ever going to drop off.
Well, and it's not
so
like,
you got to be a little proactive here and do something about it.
It's not like exactly 1,000%. And it's not like sports in itself are this intrinsically fair thing. In fact, sports are intrinsically competitive. So why would you expect that if you just wait your turn will come? Curtis, you said it well. Like, you actually go out and do something about it. And I think that, again, it's just this idea that, like, you can't have this and that. I can't get over that. The Mariners can have more. And what makes it frustrating is twofold. One, obviously, the playoff drought. You two were in elementary school in 2001.
Yes.
You are married and you have children.
Yes.
And
yes.
You're in your 30s. Uh-huh. I just want everyone to realize how long, when you consider if you're listening and you were in your 20s or your 30s and, you know, now you're in your 50s or your 60s, that is a huge chunk of your adult life. I think, though, it's more pronounced when people were in elementary school and now they're married with kids, or in the case of some of the board ops we have, like Brady, who was born and then is now an adult.
Yeah, like, Brandon Gustafson, born in 95.
That's what I'm saying. That's a generation of people. Mm-hmm. There's that part of it that is in itself frustrating. The other side of it is that they do genuinely have so many great young talents. They have so many great prospects, and you want to see it pay off, and I don't want to see it not capitalized on.
But what I don't want to see, and I don't care if we blow out four down territory here, by the way, because the thing is that for me, when I watch this team and I watch the process of bringing up these players, okay, is the fact that all of them up to this point have been brought up relatively early to what the original timeline was, okay? Logan Gilbert, Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez. Julio is one of those players that yeah, you could understand, you know, him being brought up at the time that he did, but they weren't initially planning on Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick coming up at the time that they did. George Kirby, Matt Brash, same thing. But they had to. They had to because of the holes that were currently on the roster. They had to because of the depth that they lacked. And that's the part that I'm talking about in regards to, at some point, you've got to, you know, do more from a veteran standpoint to bring legitimate depth to this team. I'm sorry, Abraham Toro and Dylan Moore, I genuinely really like Dylan Moore in terms of the type, the who he is, the scrappiness, the speed that he brings to the table, but he doesn't have a real major league bat.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. So having him as a depth player isn't necessarily the best thing for your team, and especially when you have injuries, because now you're relying on him way more than you want to. Same with Abraham Toro. I mean, so it just, these are the types of things that when you talk about underselling, right? Underselling from what can you add and what should you do? I'm sorry. I would much rather be on the error of overdoing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe blocking a younger player one more year from coming up and letting them cook and develop a little bit longer at the minor leagues than thrusting them to be in a spot where they are not ready or prepared for at this point.
From the 206, it's not a money problem. It's a roster spot problem. They only have so many spots on the 40-man and 26-man rosters. I really disagree. I think for the most part, it is not a roster problem. There are certain positions where they're like, we know we want Julio to be an outfielder. We know Julio is going to be a superstar, and we will under no circumstances sign ourselves up to this mega-rich long-term deal for anyone who would inevitably block his spot and block his development. But you're telling me, like, you are telling me right now that you intended to enter the season in your best case scenario, not quite sure who your final starter would be in your rotation. You're telling me that you were looking at between George Kirby and Matt Brash. You ended up going with Brash, and that was because you genuinely didn't want to block Brash.
Right.
You didn't want to block Kirby. Or is it because you wanted to sign a pitching free agent? You wanted to make a trade, but for whatever reason, couldn't do either of those things.
Correct.
That is what I think happened. Do I have intel that that happened? No. Outside of an interview that Jerry Dipoto had with our very station when he said that the focus was on adding another starter to the rotation and
Correct.
That didn't end up happening.
Correct.
So presumably a trade fell through or they didn't get a free agent they wanted. I'm guessing a trade didn't happen because there weren't many pitching free agents available at the time that were really top-line starters. I also think that this is a club that has shown, and everyone will point to like the one time when they spent a lot of money, and some people will say the narrative that this club doesn't spend is tired. I disagree with you because, once again, look at payroll. Curtis, where are the Mariners right now? 22?
22nd.
22nd? You're telling me that this is a club that isn't afraid to spend? I think this is a club that very much has spending limitations. In fact, another reason I think that that's something is Kevin Mather. I know Kevin Mather is gone. I know that the team worked very hard to distance themselves from him, but he was with this organization for a very long time. And I think that there is a business aspect to baseball where some clubs genuinely feel uncomfortable going over a certain dollar amount. And unfortunately, the Mariners are in a position where they're probably going to have to do that because of their history of losing. And it's this really uncomfortable place for business. And I understand that from a business point of view. I truly, truly do. But to say that the reason the Mariners roster looks exactly like it is right now is because of roster decisions and not blocking spots, I could not disagree with more.
Well, I am right there with you because, again, the mentality, I understand wanting to give guys opportunities and wanting to make room for them. But if you're a true playoff team, let's look at the Atlanta Braves, for example, right? The Atlanta Braves had a lot of arms that were down at the, you know, in the minor leagues that ended up helping them during their playoff run. Right, Curtis? That as they got
into... Ian Anderson was one. I mean, they've had other guys come through there too. But, yeah, they made some pretty, you know, important call-ups last year on their way to the playoffs, and they needed every single one of them because they were down their very best player. And, obviously, in most situations, that would spell the end of a team season. Mm-hmm. But... that was a turning point for them, and they said, you know what, we're not going to go quietly into the night.
Yeah, and they were, and those guys were ready in that moment. So instead of, you know, looking at this and saying, oh, well, we needed to give an opportunity for George Kirby and Matt Brash, that's not your original thought process. That's not how you were thinking. That was a fallback plan. You can't tell me that that was their original, what they desired, what they wanted to do. Because as you mentioned, Jerry DePoto said differently, that they wanted to add another arm to the rotation. So when your fallback plan is to put up these younger, talented, very talented, but younger guys into a role that you yourself did not necessarily want to see them in, that's just poor planning. Mm-hmm. And you know, there, and hopefully George Kirby is able to swim, much like Logan Gilbert was able to do last year, and that was amazing, right? But more often than not, you want to be in a position where these young guys, when they get these opportunities, that they are coming to a soft landing spot and that there's great veteran players around them, surrounding them, so that they don't have to be one of the major key contributors if things aren't working perfectly for them. And right now, the Mariners are feeling the burden of relying too much on these young guys to take the next step, instead of going out and ensuring that they get, you know, proven veteran players. I look at the catcher position. In and of itself, the catcher position, end of story. Why are you relying on a three-man rotation yet again between Raleigh, Torrens, and Tom Murphy, and none of those guys over the course of any stretch, okay, and I mean like a long period of stretch of time, have really shown you that they could be reliable players, you know, over the course of a year, right? Torrens in the second half of last year showed you some promise. Mm-hmm. But again, you're taking that data point and you're trying to expand it past that moment. And even then, they wanted to go with the three-man rotation. Tom Murphy was good 2 years ago. Or was it 3 years ago? 3 years ago.
It was 2019.
Yeah. And you're trying to get that version of Tom Murphy back again, right? Cal Raleigh, young guy. And so overall, you did not create the depth that you needed to be able to help yourself get out of some of these slumps. And if you have Jesse Winker that's struggling through a slump for the first couple months, okay, well, it's not a problem because you have the depth to be able to, you know, carry this team until he does get his bat going. And maybe it does happen in the summer, and, yeah, and now your team takes off because Jesse Winker really does, right? But right now, the fact that Jesse Winker has not really been here to be able to drive in runs and help you carry the team since Mitch Haniger's been out, I mean, the effects of that are 10 times as much.
Ultimately, I also want to stress something, which is it is a complicated feeling that I think a lot of Mariners fans have, where some people aren't critical of the team at all, and that's completely fair, and some people are probably overly critical of the team. And then most people, I think, fall somewhere in the middle where you want the team to be better. You are sometimes a fatalist and sometimes have some trust issues with a team that's been out of the playoffs for 20 years, and that's understandable, and I don't blame anyone for that. You enjoy watching the team on a day-to-day basis. You root so hard for them to win. You get excited for every hit. You enjoy every good moment, and you just want it so badly that it's hard sometimes not to be angry. But that doesn't mean that you're not a fan, and that doesn't mean I'm not so excited about some of the pieces that are with this club. For instance, I like Scott Servais as a manager. I genuinely do. I think he's a good manager and a great manager for a young club. And there are some people that disagree with me. That's my opinion. I think Julio Rodriguez is going to be a superstar. There are many people who agree with me on that. I don't know anyone who disagrees. I love having Mitch Haniger here. Would love to keep him here even longer. I think JP at shortstop, would I have liked a premier shortstop added in free agency? Yes. Do I still really like JP as part of this team? Yes. I think he's a huge recipe in terms of the energy you were trying to create. And I think leadership has a dollar value that is hard to explain, but worth keeping someone there, even if they aren't as great a player as some other pieces. Ultimately, I don't want anyone to misconstrue frustration and not understand that it's often wrapped up in love and fandom. I mean, Curtis, you can be critical of any team that you love, and you, Jake, and I have sat here and said, oh, I wish they would have done this, I wish they would have done this, and you're sitting here with a Mariners hat, a Mariners shirt on.
Oh, yeah. It's in my blood to root for the Mariners, to follow this team. But like we talk about, you can be critical of teams that you love. I think that's a healthy fandom, to expect more out of the teams that you root for, especially the teams that, you know, it goes back to your childhood. Mm-hmm. Like, you remember watching them as a kid every single night. Like, that's how friendships and family members, you know, bond over certain things. And to want to see this team succeed should be on the forefront of everybody's mind, everybody that has a rooting interest in this team.
Well, and the good thing is I do think there are a lot of people with this organization that have that same rooting interest, who genuinely want this team to succeed.
And no question.
I hope that they find a way to get it right this year, and I know everyone else listening does as well. We'll see if they can start doing that in this series against Houston. Hopefully Curtis didn't ruin that for us by making fun of UW. You had one job. Let's see. Let's look ahead to this series a little bit. We'll look ahead to the weekend. Also, I'm going to wrap up the week. We've done this or that. I'm going to get back to what
I need to know.
What I need to know. What I need to know for 45. So I will remind you guys, but if you want to send in your questions right now, you can. Any question you have to the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776. It's all coming your way next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I was trying to think of a fun way to end our Friday for the last half hour here. By the way, we're going to send you guys to Wyman and Bob, who are live from Edgar's Cantina out at T-Mobile ahead of the Mariners series opener against the Astros. Justin Verlander versus Chris Flexen. Justin Verlander having a phenomenal season. Chris Flexen actually had one of his better outings last time, just not getting a ton of run of support. Hopefully that changes tonight. So we had a very long conversation about everything that's kind of frustrating us about the season. I want to end our final half hour here having some fun. So let's talk about how they can get right, or rather try to move forward at least in this series against the Astros. It's not going to be easy. Houston on top of the AL West right now. Angels behind them. And Texas, what are you doing there? Also in there in third place. So let's talk about what you want to see in this series, some predictions you have for this series, what needs to happen in this series. And if you want to do a bold take, I guess, you know, it is a classic bold take Friday. You can throw that in as well if you want. Mine was 5 runs on 6 hits. Is it going to happen? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're going to shell Justin Verlander tonight?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, he's bombs away.
You heard it here first, folks.
That's what we've always said when Justin Verlander's on the mound. I mean,
yeah,
home run
More
city.
Like Justin Verlander because his arm's getting cold.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
That's what they call him. That's what they call him.
Some people may cringe, but I actually want to give Stacey credit because that might be the best thing that she's done.
Honestly, like for me, that's a pretty high bar. Like that was a pretty good joke.
that was pretty good. Like
for me, that surpasses a lot of expectations.
Job well done.
Thank you. I'm going to be at the game tonight. Very excited to go, and I'm really hoping that we get to see. I think sometimes you just need momentum. Like you just need like a mindset to get going.
Yeah.
So I think what I'm hoping in this series, really, really hoping for in this series, is an improved performance collectively from the bullpen.
Right. Well, okay, so here's my question for you. Because we know Justin Verlander is going to be on the mound. The reality is, outside of Stacey's opinion, you know, 5 hits, 6 runs.
Prediction.
I believe that this is most likely going to be a low-scoring affair. I know that may shock you. But Chris Flexen has to be on it tonight. He has to be on it tonight. He cannot give up runs early in this game. They've got to be on it. And you know, this is going to be a game where it's going to be 1-2 or 3-2. That's how I envision this thing going.
You don't think it's going to be 5-2?
I don't. Right. Because I just, Verlander is too good. He's dealing. He's not Verlander. He is very much.
I think he's Verlander tonight. I think he's gone from Houston to Seattle. It's a little chillier here, Justin.
And also, you talk about momentum. Well, Houston's found their stride. I mean, you talk about, you know, the last time that these guys played, the Mariners won the series versus Houston, and that was great. And, it had everyone feeling really, really good, the electric factory, all of that. We were talking about it. But the Houston Astros have found their stride, and it is something that I believe when you're talking about them and how they're playing right now, their bats are hot, things are coming together. And so to beat a team like that at that time, you're going to have to put together a really good, clean performance. You can't have fielding errors. You can't give up untimely home runs. And you've got to come up clutch with runners in scoring position. You have to be able to do that. And if the Mariners can do that, in this series versus Houston, then yeah, you feel pretty good about it, because the next two series after this against Baltimore, following that, you feel like the Mariners could really truly potentially build off of some mm-hmm. momentum to close out the month, which obviously we are all very, very much rooting for, right?
Yes. So. All right, so good stuff from the bullpen. That's the number one kind of key for this game. I think, you know, you're also looking at some production from the bottom of the lineup. And I'm echoing what you just mentioned, but in terms of like a goal when you're looking at it, if you're going to get better with runners in scoring position, and importantly, while they haven't faced this often, only in 30 at-bats, better with bases loaded situations where they're only mm-hmm. batting 167, you got to get production from the bottom of the lineup. God, I forget what the record was, but it was an insane record when they get like two or more hits from the final four or something like that.
It was RBIs. If the bottom half, if 6-9, if 6-9 generates an RBI, one RBI, their win percentage increases dramatically. And so that's a big key for the Mariners, is to have that back part of the lineup be able to contribute somewhat if the top of the lineup is not going to be on fire, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that you have to look forward to. And can I also make one little suggestion here to our lineup? Curtis, Stacey, tell me if you think
you're out of line.
I think I know what you're going with.
Oh, really?
Oh, I think I know what you said to the lineup.
Somebody in the number three spot?
Yes, it is,
oh,
Curtis.
Here we go.
You know me
here
too well.
We go.
Can we not put Adam Frazier in the number three spot, please?
Oh, lineup's out.
He is not a third.
Adam Frazier. I'm just kidding.
Gosh. Can we not put Adam Frazier in the three slot, please? Can we agree that that's not the right thing to do here?
Curtis, do you know why they were doing that? Winker lead off, Frazier in the third spot?
Because Winker last year with the Reds had quite a bit of success hitting out of the leadoff spot. So they were like, oh, maybe this can get him going if we put him at.
But then why Frazier in the three?
Honestly, I don't mind having Winker. I don't mind having Winker be a leadoff guy, because you know he's been able to generate walks. He could get himself on base. I don't have a problem necessarily with that. But Adam Frazier should not be the guy that's going to the three slot.
To be fair, who else would you put there?
Julio. I'd put Julio.
Well, then
in
who'd you have in cleanup?
I would go Winker.
Normally, it would be Haniger.
Winker, JP, Ty France. Okay? Winker, JP, Ty France. And then you could go Suarez, and then you could go Julio and have Frazier hit sixth. Like, you've got to get better production out of that third spot. Mm-hmm. And I just think that either putting, you know, mixing up that spot, the three guys that I would be comfortable hitting in the three spot would be JP, Ty France, or Julio. Those are the three guys that I think should be, you know, in that three spot.
All right. We're wrapping things up with What I Need to Know, a classic. You guys know how this works. Send in your questions right now, any question you have, to the Mac and Jack's text line 206-421-3776. Your questions, our answers, is next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, it's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating Electric. So get your questions in right now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776. What I Need to Know. Oh, I love these kinds of questions. What's the best number for a quarterback?
Best number for a quarterback?
Like 7 or 8.
I was just going to say 7. 7 is the best number for a quarterback.
7 or 8. I would also submit 11.
Double digits are tough.
I would submit 11 and 12. And 3.
Some of the best quarterbacks.
I think 3 is a good number.
Yes.
I personally really like 9, but I don't think it's the best looking quarterback number.
I will say two rules. Number one, I don't typically like double digits for quarterbacks, but some of the best quarterbacks of all time have been double digits. Two, I don't mind number one, but you have to be a bigger guy and a really good quarterback.
Number one's
if you're
going
to wear number one, you need to
number.
Be genuinely an elite quarterback.
What's the worst quarterback number?
Worst.
Let's say 19.
Okay, 19.
Yeah, you look like a wide receiver. Practice squad wide receiver.
Phillip Rivers was 17. Like,
yeah, that's a good one.
13.
18. Ooh. I mean, Peyton Manning was 18.
Yeah,
but like,
he made it work. I would say
those high numbers,
also
though, just...
6. 6?
Oh,
ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
2. 2's a bad quarterback number as well. Yeah. No, that's Drew Locke's number. Sorry, Drew.
From the 4-2 piece about to call in. It's not a bad number. From the 425, what's your go-to Memorial Day barbecue item?
Burger.
Yeah.
Burger. Yeah.
Oh, I got to go hot dog with baked beans. Of course. How could I not? Classic.
Gross, Stacey.
It's classic.
What an abomination.
Well, hey.
Okay. I would say hot dogs and burgers, but also, you know, grilling up a specialty steak, always good. Always good. You spend a little bit more money on a steak, well worth it. On Memorial Day, but the classic is hot dogs and burgers. How could it not?
What I need to know, if you could replace one NFL franchise with another city, which team would go and which city would get the new team? Ooh.
Okay, say it.
So now
say,
do you want to be strategic with it?
Say that one more time.
If you could replace one NFL franchise with another city, which team would go and which city would get the new team? Here's how I'm interpreting it. You're basically moving one team to another city. So which city gets the team and which city loses the team is how I'm in. If you're the 360, if that's not what you meant, let me know. But that's how I'm interpreting it.
Okay.
So you can be strategic. You can be like, yeah, I really think the Rams could go back to St. Louis and maybe switch divisions.
Okay.
Or you could say, why don't you put the Raiders in the NFC West? I think that'd be great. And move the Rams to the AFC West.
I think you got to move Jacksonville. You got to move the Jags out of Jacksonville.
Yeah, Florida. Yeah. Somebody, way too many teams.
That's brutal.
Somebody has to.
Where do you
take
move
them.
The Jags? You know, there's places in the middle of the country that could use.
Like Omaha.
You know, seriously, like Nebraska.
Nebraska.
Wyoming.
Omaha is in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, Nebraska.
Oklahoma?
Nah.
No, I'm thinking after more
stole,
of like a North.
After they
what
stole
about
Sonic
Center
Reserve.
Yeah,
else.
That's true. That's very true. Very true. But I mean,
Arkansas?
You know,
Little Rock?
No.
Little Rock Jags?
Here's the thing.
Alabama?
I hate seeing Alabama. Like, you know, one of the bigger cities get richer. But I've saw this
you
brought up.
You better not say this.
I'm going to say it. I think Dallas getting another team.
LA has two teams.
Yeah, Dallas, LA doesn't deserve
Dallas
two teams.
Dallas is way more of a football city.
LA having two teams is the stupidest thing ever.
Actually, would have
ever.
Room
this
to have two.
So then they're going to have three football teams: two Dallas teams, one Houston team.
Yeah.
Why don't you give one to San Antonio?
Because they actually care about football there.
Oh God!
And it would be awesome to have someone compete with Jerry Jones in the city of Dallas. That'd be amazing. That'd be like. You know, like an actual Western show when you have competing ranches.
How about Oregon?
This town ain't big enough for two of us.
That's right. That's exactly right. I would just love to see
a
that.
A team in Portland?
Oregon?
A team in Portland?
No. No.
Portland's not big enough.
Well, you got it's going to be tough to go to a place where you've got to be good enough to compete with the college football team. Like, Alabama doesn't have a pro team, but, like, you'll never, unless you are elite, people will just watch Alabama football.
Well,
it's
like,
the same thing that happens in Florida. People
if you had a team in Portland, you're never going to surpass the popularity of the Ducks in that state.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Someone said move the Patriots to Alaska.
Move the Patriots.
How about moving a team to Canada, like Toronto?
Yeah.
No.
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 No. No. Disaster.
Fun.
Jake, you're a CFL alum.
I want to see
Drake
go to football
teams.
Almost a CFL
alum. Every time that I had an opportunity to go, I pulled myself out. Except for with the BC Lions. I was there for a couple weeks.
I'm moving on to the next question here. What I need to know. Going to the Mariners game tonight with the boys, where should we eat before the game?
Like in the stadium or outside of the stadium?
Do you have one for each?
I mean, you can get like a Seattle dog out on the sidewalk there.
That might be a good spot.
Although I think Seattle dogs hit different after the game. When it's like 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing the 2-for-5 special outside the stadium.
Wow, I didn't even know they did that.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic move.
outside? I don't know the area just outside well enough.
Like,
to be honest.
Between Lumen Field and.
Yeah.
And T-Mobile Park, that's probably where you're going to find your best street options for food.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have probably participated more. In that realm than I have.
What?
Just
getting food
restaurants
between
or
Lumen Field and T-Mobile Park.
No.
Or is that why they're investing a lot of money into the beer garden?
Beer gardens are fun, but there's not usually a lot of food. Yeah, I've always eaten in the park. So I'm
sorry, we're striking out here
there's
for
a
you.
Sorry, buddy.
Like Jack's Barbecue's near the stadium. That's really good.
Someone has said salmon on the grill.
Ooh, Tats's from
grill and clam. Clam bake. Number one. Dough zone before the game in walking distance. Multiple people have said that. Dim sum in the
international district.
Those are the suggestions from listeners.
Tatses. I've been there. Actually, I went there with, I think I went there with Taylor a couple of years ago. Really good deli.
Multiple people have also said Paseos. I didn't know there was one near there. I thought there was one in Fremont.
Huh.
But,
yeah, I just usually eat. I usually just eat at my house before I go, or I eat at the ballpark. I don't really usually, you know, hang around before before I go into the stadium.
Yeah, I'm going Diamond Club tonight, so I'll just probably have some shrimp.
You're in the Diamond Club,
oh my
girl.
Gosh.
Yes, it's
Stacy.
So
wow. Stacy, red carpet.
Stacy attends one red carpet and thinks she's
Diamond Club.
The top of the town.
Wow, man.
Wow, Stacy is changing before our very eyes.
Yeah.
Deal with it, guys.
That's what happens when you turn 39.
I'm not
Tuesday.
30. Why are you do? Why do you do this? Why do you do? Why do you do this? People see me and they yell things at me. I'm not. You know what? And if I was, great. 39 is young. So thank you very much.
You're absolutely right. Can't wait to celebrate your birthday Tuesday,
guys.
Gonna have to bring out a lot of candles. Everyone, have a great Memorial Day weekend. Remember what it represents. We appreciate you guys. It's been a fun week, and hopefully we have a lot of fun things to talk about after the weekend. See you later, everybody.